Penguin Random House Audio presents Quicksand, What It Means to Be a Human Being by Henning Mankell, translated from the Swedish by Laurie Thompson with Marlene Delaghi, read for you by Sean Barrett. Part 1. The Crooked Finger. Chapter 1. The Car Accident. Early in the morning of the 16th of December, 2013, Eva drove me to the Statoil depot in Kungsbacka, where I collected the car I had hired. I was going to drive to Valokra, just outside Landskrona, and back. The car was due to be returned that same evening. The following day I would be busy signing copies of my latest novel in bookshops in Gothenburg and Kungsbacka, as part of the pre-Christmas publicity program. The wintry morning was freezing cold, but there was no rain or snow. The drive would take me 3 hours if I stopped for breakfast on the outskirts of Farbel, as was my wont. The head of my theatre in Maputo, Manuelo Suero, with whom I had now been working for 30 years, was visiting Sweden. This was to be the first real meeting concerning the production we were planning to stage the following autumn. Manuelo was staying with Eivind, who was going to direct the version of Hamlet I had been thinking about virtually all the years I had been working at the Teatro Avenida. It had struck me very early on that Hamlet was ideal for adapting as a drama about an African king. The fact is that something very similar to the plot of Hamlet actually took place in a part of southern Africa in the 19th century. My idea was that at the end of the play, when everybody is dead and Fortinbras comes on stage, he would be the white man who arrives to start colonizing Africa on a serious scale. I therefore thought it would be logical to allow Fortinbras to conclude the play with the to-be-or-not-to-be soliloquy. If you are going to perform Hamlet, you must have an actor who can play the part in the way you envisage it, and now we had just the man. Jorginho would be able to do it. He had developed significantly over the last few years, and he was also then best of all the actors when it came to the way he approached the language. It was a case of now or never. As I drove through Halland, I found myself looking forward to the coming day. I was filled with great expectations. The roads further south were dry, although it was very cloudy and overcast. I wasn't driving all that fast, unusually for me. I had given them an arrival time, and I didn't want to get there too early. Then suddenly it all happens, very quickly. Just north of Laholm, I pull out into the outside lane in order to overtake a slow-moving lorry. Somewhere on the road surface is a patch of something, possibly oil. I start skidding and lose control. The car crashes head-on into the central barrier and the airbags inflate. I black out for a second or two. When I come to, I sit there in silence for a while. What has happened? I feel around to make sure I am still in one piece. I'm not injured. I'm not bleeding. Then I get out. Cars have stopped and people are running towards me. I tell them I'm okay. I'm not hurt. I stand on the verge and telephone Eva. When she answers, I make a point of trying to sound calm. You can hear that it's me, I say, and that I'm all right. What's happened? She says immediately. I tell her about the accident. I play down the crash and insist that all is well. I don't really know what's going to happen next, but I'm fine. I don't know if she believes me. Then I telephone Valokra. I'm afraid I shan't be coming, I say. I've crashed into the central barrier on the road just outside Laholm. I'm not injured, but the car's a total write-off. The police arrive. I blow into their bag, but I'm completely sober. I describe the accident. While all this is happening, the fire brigade tows away the car, presumably to the scrap heap. An ambulance driver asks if I want a lift to A&D, just to be on the safe side. I say no, as I am not in any pain at all. The police drive me to the railway station in Laholm. Half an hour later, I'm on a train back to Gothenburg. I still haven't been to Valokra, and I never did the book signings there. Without really knowing why, I date my cancer to that very day, the 16th of December, 2013. There is no logic in doing so, of course, My tumours and metastases must have been growing for some considerable time. Nor did I have any symptoms or other indications on that particular day. It was more of a warning. Something was happening. A week later, and just before Christmas, Eva and I went to our little flat in Antibes on the Mediterranean coast. In the morning of Christmas Eve, I was woken up by pains in my neck and a general feeling of stiffness. I thought I must have been stupid enough to lie in an awkward position and given myself a twisted neck, what the doctors call torticollis. But the pain didn't go away. Instead, it spread quickly down my right arm. I lost all feeling in the thumb of my right hand. And it hurt. In the end, I rang an orthopedic specialist in Stockholm I was lucky enough to get hold of, despite the fact that almost everybody was on holiday for Christmas. I went back to Sweden, and he examined me on the 28th of December. He thought it could well be early signs of a slipped disc at the top of my spine, but of course it was not possible to say without a scan, which we agreed I should have as soon as the Christmas holidays were over. The 8th of January dawned. It was a cold morning, and snowing lightly. I thought it was high time to get the slipped disc diagnosis confirmed. I was still suffering severe neck pains. Strong painkillers helped, but that was only a stopgap measure. The slipped disc needed proper treatment. Early in the morning, I had two scans. 2 hours later, the torticollis and slipped disc theory had changed into a cancer diagnosis. I was shown a computer image of a cancerous tumour 3 centimetres in diameter in my left lung, and there was a metastasis in my neck. That was the cause of my pain. The diagnosis was very clear. It was serious, possibly incurable. I asked hesitantly if that meant I should go home and wait for the end. Not long ago, that would have been our advice, said the doctor, but now we have treatment options. Eva was with me at the Sophia Hem when I was informed of the situation. Afterwards, as we stood outside in the cold winter weather waiting for a taxi, we didn't have much to say. We probably didn't say anything at all, in fact. But I saw a little girl jumping up and down in a snowdrift, full of joy and energy. I saw myself, as a child, jumping around in the snow. Now I was 65 years old and had been diagnosed with cancer. I was not jumping around. It was as if Eva had read my thoughts. She took a firm grip of my arm. As we drove away in the taxi, the little girl was still jumping up and down in her snowdrift. Today, as I write this on the 18th of June, one could say that the time that has passed since then was both lengthy and short. I am unable to write a full stop, neither after a fatal outcome nor a declaration that I am healthy again. I am in the middle of something. There is no conclusion as yet. But this is what I have been through and what I have experienced. The story does not have an ending. It is ongoing. This is what this book is about. My life. What has been, and what is. Chapter 2. People reluctantly on their way into the shadows. 2 days after the car crash, I paid a visit to Slepp Church, which is close to where I live on the coast, just north of Kungsbacka. I suddenly felt an urge to see a painting I had observed and admired many times, a painting like no other. It is a family portrait. Years before photography was invented, people with sufficient means used to commission oil paintings. This picture depicts the vicar, Gustav Fredrik Hjortberg, and his wife, Anna Helena, and their children, all 15 of them. The picture was painted at the beginning of the 1770s, when Gustav Hjortberg was in his 50s. He died a few years later, in 1776. It is possible that he was the person who introduced potatoes into Sweden on a serious scale. What is striking and remarkable about the picture, and perhaps also frightening, is that it doesn't only depict the individuals who were alive when the artist, Jonas Durs,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?